This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Welcome to the My Old Man Said podcast. I'm David Michael, the editor of myoldmansaid.com. This is part two of episode 192. So if you haven't listened to part one yet, I suggest you skip back to that, or else some of what we say in part two might not make much sense to you. If you're a My Old Man Said patron, I will be stitching both parts together for one long podcast, as well as there'll be a small outtake show, as well as including some a couple of things that I cut out. And also expect a solo show from me in the next day or two as well. If you want to become a My Old Man Said patron and get access to Match Club, our inner community, and access to the extra shows, please do go to myoldmansaid.com and click on the patron link. So part one, we were discussing the transfer window so far and how it's played out in terms of how Villa have had to operate in it because of, you know, the markets and their stature and where they finish in the league, etc. In this second part, we get more into the specifics of individual players. So thanks very much for listening in advance, and here's part two. So here's a question for you. Why hasn't Diego, and this is me being a devil's advocate, why hasn't Diego Carlos turned up, let's say, a top six team in the Premier League?
Yeah, that's a question.
In the last few years.
Because a player who's played pretty much every game for Sevilla in, like, you know, one of the best defences in Spain, you would think would be the kind of player who normally ends up at Man City and everyone goes, who's that guy? And then a year later, they go, fucking hell,
well,
what a player.
Never mind Manchester City. Let's say Manchester City are sorted. Let's look at Manchester United, who fucking need to rebuild their defence.
Yeah, they're a mess.
Sorry, just before you go on, you look at in the past when we've signed centre-backs that are rated, there's a reason, and it was because they were injury-prone. You look at Ron Vlahovic, you look at Martin Larsson, and so you can say, well, they were gambles, and that's why the top six didn't go for it, because they obviously want
Collins and Dunn as well.
Consistency and reliability. But in this situation, it's an interesting one, because you would think that ye Manchester Uniteds or the like would go in for him, because, you know, they've got big problems in their defence.
Do you not think that there's a change in the order of English domestic football? I think that this is a very unique time that United have been in disarray for a number of seasons now. Headless, I would say, in both recruitment, on and off the pitch in their back room. I think Chelsea is an unknown quantity now that their ownership changed. That's a big unknown and hugely unsettling for their squad. City have basically had a policy of, and I believe this about Grealish, the more I think about it, a policy of just buying players so that other teams can't have them. Arsenal, again, another team I would say that have been in a long transitional phase of some sort, and Spurs, who are now, in my view, hamstrung by the painful cost of their stadium, albeit with you.
Yeah, but they've still got that Conte effect. Mm-hmm. They'll be tough. There will be a tough cookie to play, that, and hence why they got into the Champions League.
The thing is, United were getting the new manager in. They had what do you call it, Ragnick in, and he wasn't trusted to buy anybody because they knew he wasn't going to be there. So they couldn't buy anybody. Chelsea were under sanctions. They couldn't buy anybody. City have the centre-backs they need. Liverpool have the centre-backs they need. Spurs, I would argue, they're happy enough with their centre-backs because they got Romero in as well. So it was a bit of striking while the iron's hot. It was the perfect time to get these players.
And the fact that the two Spanish giants aren't in the market.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, Real are building a stadium. They've been, you know, they wanted to go and put all the eggs in one basket on Mbappe. Barca are basically getting free signings, although Barca is still Barca. They'll still pull, but he ain't going to go there and get the money he wants or the fee for the club.
And I think that's strengthened the Premier League, though. Don't you know? I look at that sort of middle group of teams. You look at the, you know, Leicester have got an outstanding coach, but were badly hit by injuries last term. But probably also can't. They're on a policy of purchase, almost money ball. That's the way they've been doing it, and that works for them. Wolves, you know, underachieved really in the end. You know, apparently the whole Portugal squad.
So in terms of Carlos, it's a perfect storm. You've got the Gerrard factor, you've got the Brazilian factor, you've also got the certain top six teams in the Premier League not really needing a centre-back as desperately, and, you know, the likes of the top two in Spain, the Italians, just not being having the pulling power financially.
I also wonder with him, because he's 29, if you're one of the tip-top clubs and you're in the Champions League, they've seen a lot of him. They've seen him in the Champions League. They'll have seen him in Europe and gone, is he going to make us better to win that trophy? Now, for us, of course, it levels us up to where we want to be. But our bar is set lower at the moment. If you're Chelsea, Man City, whoever, even maybe Barca, Real, it's like, does he make us that much better?
Well, look at the two maybe Chelsea centre-halves, you know, arguably two of the best. I mean, admittedly, Rudiger's obviously gone to Madrid. But, you know, that was a centre-half pairing where you have to be pretty good to get in amongst that. Same with the Man City, you know, defence. I think that's the point, isn't it? That we're in that, I won't say luxurious position because it's not an easy market, but for the first time, we've got the ability to pay both fee. And I think that the real advantage we've got is we seem quite content with wage demands. I think we take we've been quite shrewd on fees.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, we're cash buyers, aren't we? There's no fortune on the chain.
These players, let's just go through them quickly in terms of pros and cons. Coutinho, I was always, if push comes to shove, we don't desperately need him because there is that Buendia factor, and it allows Buendia more room to breathe and you know, develop. But at the same time, when you see, you know, the goal against Manchester City, for example, you just think, well, actually, you want that in your fucking team.
Yep.
And we have this kind of mindset, or maybe we've been guilty as Villa fans, for always choosing a first 11 and thinking, oh, well, he's going to have to sit on the bench. Where, your big clubs, they're thinking about the squads that they have. And you're thinking, well, actually, yeah, we need a squad. We need both Buendia. And I think Gerrard said, you know, when somebody asked him Buendia or Coutinho, and he said, well, both.
Yep.
It's big boys mentality, isn't it?
Mentality is the point, and that's the thing that's got to change for Villa. It's you're absolutely right. I think that when Pep Guardiola looks at how he's going to defeat a team, he's looking at the squad, you know, and that's why Grealish was used in the way he was last season for me, and also it was Gundogan who came off the bench and was devastating,
game,
you know, as good a display in 15 minutes as you'll see. Contrast that to what you were just saying about a Coutinho. On his day, and I think when he's in the mood and properly supported, as technically good a footballer as I've ever seen play for Villa in my, you know,
and
that goal he scored at the Etihad should, if it hasn't already, and I am confident of what I'm about to say, that the club have to, if you've got an opportunity over two seasons to really get him out of his, imagine what you could achieve.
It's like Benteke, when Benteke was destroying teams single-handedly, it's like, it was like, what a time to have this striker that we've fucking wanted for years. One of the weakest Villa teams in the worst period. If we had him any other time, we would be mopping up trophies.
But it's mentality change as a club as well. That's the bit that's now got to come. That at 70 minutes when Coutinho scores that goal, Coutinho is minded that he expects, going off that pitch, he is not accustomed to been walking away from that ground having lost. But I thought there were too many players on that day where they've got to understand that if you're going to be a winner, you've got to wake up like a Man City or champions here. And you know, when you are 2-0 down at the crucial moment when you could be on your knees at the Etihad and, you know, with a title slipping through your fingers, you think, actually, we're going to win this.
Shit happens, and, you know, this is the beauty of football. So, you know, losing a 2-0 lead and, you know, losing 3-2 to Manchester City in isolation, you think, well, you know, I can live with that. But then when you just trace it back and you go, well, actually, it's not the first time it happened exactly. This season. The timing was pretty much the same, 10 minutes left, whatever it was against Wolves. Then you've seen yourself squander a 2-goal lead against Leeds at home as well. And you're thinking, hang on a minute, why isn't this being stamped out? Why
that's
is this
the mentality element
perpetually happening? So, yeah, so this mentality and character completely has to change. So, sorry, just Chris and Phil very quickly on Coutinho.
I mean, we spoke about it before. You know, I think the original quoted price with his buyout fee, I think most Villa fans were like, nah, sorry, mate, we ain't doing that deal. But when we sort of found out what the actual deal was, the wage demands that he's dropped, you kind of go, actually, I think it's a good bit of business. Especially yeah. If I think now that he's, because from what Gerrard has said multiple times, if you can get him happy, which he seems to be one of those players, he's got to feel the love. He's got to feel settled. His family are here. He'll kind of know the area a bit better. I think he'll have friends. He's got the Brazilian connection with a few of them, which I think will help him. It's all set up for him to kind of go, you know, we've built everything for you here. Now it's on you. You've just got to go and do it, get a good pre-season, get yourself fit and healthy, firing. And, you know, if we can get him on form,
so are you happy?
Yeah. Yeah.
Phil?
Yes, I'm happy because I think it's going to make Buendia sort of alter his game slightly, because I think Buendia has the potential to be a different player. Coutinho is going to play the way Coutinho does. I think Buendia has the ability to change and be a bit, either a bit more deeper, a bit more in the right, just somewhere, because I can see a difference in them now.
Just quickly, the Robin Olsen, similar situation, we had him on loan, made permanent. We only got to see him in one game, maybe a little bit nervy at the start. But
good kicking, though.
But as we highlighted, his kicking, potentially could have helped us win that game.
Yeah.
I mean, the debate is, would Martinez do anything different? I think where Martinez came in, he might have saved one of those, but the main thing is he would have been an experienced head in terms of draining the clock.
Oh, he'd have gone down and played injured, wouldn't he, when we conceded the first one?
There's no way a team at this level should be, it doesn't matter who the fuck they are, should be scoring 3 goals against you in 5 minutes if you apply the dark arts.
But I'm pretty reasonably content with the Olsen one. I think if you can have an international goalkeeper as your backup, great. You know, you can have Steer as number three. I'd imagine he'll, when he's back from injury, he's got a year left on his contract, so you're reasonably well sort of stocked in that area.
Yeah, especially when you consider those clowns that came in out of nowhere, who I can't even remember.
Moreira and Kalinic and Moreira, the warm-up goalie, had the best, worst first game ever.
I mean, I called it. As soon as I saw him, I called it. And said, so that is the worst keeper I've ever seen. Like,
it's got to be the
life.
Most bizarre debut ever. You save a penalty, you keep a clean sheet, and you still look like the worst goalie
people,
ever.
People, and you can tell the lazy fucking fans who haven't watched the game, giving me shit, he saved a penalty, he kept a clean sheet. I said, that guy's going nowhere. Zero chance of him ever playing again.
Well, he was signed when we were about to go out of business and needed a goalie.
Yeah.
We know our goalies. We've sat through years and years and years of dreadful,
decades.
Not just dreadful backup goalkeepers, but dreadful first choice. Yeah. So we know what a shit goalkeeper looks like.
If I'm tweeting that this goalkeeper's crap, he's crap. That's basically, that's all you need
done.
To know.
It's done. It's you a are done welcome. Deal.
And God knows who the fuck scouted him, but I'm a better keeper than him, and that is that's the truth. It's not just me being some arsehole. He was terrible. It was embarrassing to the Villa scouting department that could actually get through the cracks. But yeah, I have no problem. The way I look at second string keepers is, are you comfortable with them filling in for the odd game? And then there's the, are you comfortable with them actually playing 10, 12 games, like a chunk of the season?
Not to think so.
Not convinced on the latter.
And I think, you know, it's that thing of, you know, would you accept him playing in cup games, etc.? Yeah, fine.
I think it's also, it's backfilling the elephant in the room here a little bit. The Jed Steers, I'm still recuperating from another, it was a bad Achilles injury, I think he sustained at Luton.
Yeah, another one.
On a string of bad injuries. Incremental improvement, might we call it that, you've slotted in someone who I think, hard to gauge against Man City, who were frightening in the last 15 minutes against us, but it's better, isn't it?
I mean, ideal world, you would like Tom Heaton as a backup keeper.
Yeah,
but
just about keeping two goalkeepers happy as well.
Is as dubious as hell with his injuries. Mm. So he had his chance.
Yeah, well, Olsen came in January and he seemed to be happy enough being the number.
I prefer him over Pepe Reina.
So
put it that way.
it'll work. Yeah.
Moving on to, we mentioned them, we mixed and matched them while we're talking in general about the transfer strategy and what's happened so far. But Kamara is somebody that you need to witness. He can pull as many stats out your ass and comparison stats as you want. But until he's battle-hardened in the Premier League... Because we've seen it before, technically gifted players, just not young players around his age, really not fit in, and they really had to retreat with their tail between their legs and go back to France or, you know, serve their trade in Italy, etc.
Yeah. The thing I like about Kamara, I've actually, as I said, I went through some of the scouting stuff, watched a few of the videos where they actually break down bits of play, etc. And the thing that I hope the Villa fans buy into with him is that you aren't getting an all-action midfielder who you're going to love, like, you know, box to box. That's not him. He was a centre-back first. He's moved forward. Yeah. So this is a guy who is going to be very steady. He does the simple things very well. All the scout reports have said the same thing. He can be progressive, but he's not going to kind of, you know, storm through midfield and score a wonder goal, if that's what people are expecting.
As he said, by his own admission, he says he's a soldier. And,
yeah, he is.
And that's what we need.
Yep.
You and I, Chris, we looked at the stats from last season. Was it? He had no assists, no goals, no assists.
But it's funny because you look at, you know, people can go mad on analytics, but you actually look at the analytics that you want of a player in that position, and he does all them well.
Was the passing stats really jumped out for me, that Nakamba, if he could pass a football, would be a great footballer, but doing all the hard work intercepting it and then fucking kicking it back to the opposition in the final third is thick.
There was a really interesting stat on Kamara that I'd read, and you had to kind of read into it because it's quite a subtle thing, but it does show the quality and the footballing brain, is that he actually has a very low press percentage, but when he presses, the amount that he wins the ball back is high, which means he's clever. Whereas you've seen like Nakamba, Louise, and many others down the years running around like a headless chicken trying to do two or three people's job. McGinn has been a prime example. Very ineffective player for his ability. Kamara just bides his time, wins the ball back, gives it simple. Simple things.
That can hopefully release others to do their actual jobs, and that's
exactly.
been the back end very, very quickly. The players who really suffered for that, I do think McGinn suffered for that because you're constantly cleaning up, but a player who we have not seen flourish is Douglas Luiz, because he's been playing in completely the wrong position. My fear is he could move on before we see the best of him, and that would be my suspicion. Yeah.
Yep, agreed.
But he's got other things on his mind, hasn't he? He's doing his part for the women's game.
Finally, yeah, draining the Swiss national team.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And finally, Diego Carlos.
I mean, he's an interesting one. You know, he's been one of the highest rated centre-backs in the Liga for about 3 seasons. He's obviously played in the Champions League. He's won Europa Leagues with them. When he played with Sevilla, which is most of the time, they had, I think it was the third best defence in the whole of Europe. Highest rate, you know, shots by all the usual stats, etc. you'd expect for a defender. He's up there, but as you said earlier, why haven't you had the big move?
We do have suspicious minds, don't we?
I think it's his headline one. It's that Europa League run where he gave away a penalty in the quarterfinal, the semifinal,
which is
and
what
the
comes
final.
In the scouting reports, that it's not necessarily mentality, but it's decision making and temperament.
He is also more, let's say, like Mings's character likes to get, you know, into the battle.
Yeah.
So when you throw yourself into the battle and you're a bit more physical, you are prone to open yourself up to more mistakes and, you know, and giving away penalties. But, you know, Phil, you did offer up a stat in that profile you wrote regarding the low amount of yellow cards. I don't know if you can remember off the top of your head. So it seemed to be a kind of an anomaly coincidence that he gave away a penalty in the quarterfinal, semifinal and final.
Yeah. Very much so, because he'd only three yellows and two of them were in one match. When you compare that to Mings and Konsa, 16 between them. And Konsa, of course, was sent off twice.
It's an interesting thing. I mean, it'll get interesting once Konsa's come back from injury. But to me, sometimes he was a bit casual, Konsa, but not in the way where his positioning is great. And, you know, like Paul McGrath, he was in the right place at the right time so he can hoover stuff up with the minimum of effort. Sometimes he's a bit casual with the men coming up in behind him. His marking, he didn't catch runners. And I remember the early days when the first few games back, well, especially at Spurs, the new stadium, when Engels and Mings were being bombarded and they were, it was, you know, literally heading everything out and getting on the end of everything. And there was something about that kind of dynamic which I quite liked. Fortunately, Engels was okay with the ball as well to a certain extent.
I think
extent.
You've just got to have a bit more now.
He just switched off a few times, didn't he?
I mean, there was, a few things, depending on what press you read, I think there was a few things going on there, but you need this. You need quality squad depth, and you do need ball players. I don't want to get into the cliches, but I think you look at his CV and where he was at in, you know, on.
But I'm just saying, sorry, just to round it off. I think Carlos Mings brings back that kind of dynamical action.
I think he possibly does, but don't forget that we do. You know, looking through the glass half empty for a second, we do also have to operate on the basis that sometimes Mings won't be available, and I think that we, you know, there are the stats.
What, mentally or physically?
Well, you can take your pick.
I like him,
and
harsh.
You know the stat. You know, when he's in the team, we do better. Fact, you know, and you know, you can point to singular moments.
So do England as well.
Well, exactly, and when this is where, you know, the bullshit social media narratives can be dangerous. With that said, we look. You know, we have, if he's not around for whatever reason, suspension, injury, we look immediately weaker, and this Carlos looks like he can look after himself, I think would be the, but also a very competent footballer.
Yeah,
there feels like a sense that they're bringing in a bit of a nasty bastard, probably a big personality. If you're 29, you've been playing at Sevilla, you're a senior 50-50. Level player, you're not bringing in, and you ain't bringing in a shrinking violet.
Yeah, and you needed that because, I think it's, it's a grenade in terms of the centre-backs, that four centre-backs we had, it's a grenade right in the middle of that. Mings, it's going to sharpen his focus, but also give him, you know, a fresh challenge, either, you know, playing alongside him or thinking, actually, I'm going to have to keep my mind on this because I can't just regard myself as the best centre-back at Aston Villa.
Think back to when it was the game where Target and House deputised because of injuries or whatever, and That really exposed us, I think, that it, quite possibly,
Ham?
But it's seared into my...
Mings was on the bench, wasn't
it? You know, and that's the kind of thing where you think, right, you really do need quality players in the squad where you can slot in. And, you know, a couple of the signings, you know, worst case, even Kamara can play centre-half, you know, clearly quite competently from what we're led to believe. So,
of course, you've still
got
Chambers.
Versatility. And I think Chambers could play the DM role personally as well, but we've finally got some options, which you can't say we've had to date.
Yeah, we have options. It looks like we've got a bit of flexibility. Yeah. You know, it looks like, you know, Carlos can play basically along either side of the centre-back pairing, which means we'd better play in a three if we had to. Kamara can play at the back or in midfield. So can Chambers. You've got utility guys. You've, depending on what business we do with Ashley Young, you're going to have a more senior sort of conduit between the, you know, the sort of the management and the coaching staff and the players, and he can play in three, four, five positions, which I think you do need that kind of player. Even if he's not going to play very often, you certainly, you know, with a 9-man bench, he's worth having on it.
Yeah. And, you know, we have to factor that in now with more substitutes. You do need being able to play more substitutes. You do need a constant standard of quality across that bench, or else it's a waste. You know, we're gonna come up short against the big boys because they can swap in and out.
Well, you've got to be able
high
to
level.
You've got to be able to change the game because they're going to be able to, especially when you're into five subs territory.
And I think that five subs territory does give players like Buendia, who might have a little thought in their mind, well, you know, I should be starting and maybe I should move on. As we say, top clubs, it's all about the squad. It's not about that first 11. So it helps.
It's a good way of keeping your fringe guys feeling like
we bemoan it now. Yeah. And I think where we'll come unstuck is we'll be against the Man Cities, Man United, whoever. But I think I think back to some of the games this season where with some squad depth, so I don't know, take the towards the end of the game seasons, Palace, Burnley. Imagine if you could roll on better players at key moments
even
of the game.
Like losing to
Watford, we can leverage
like that
same advantage. You know, a Forest are not going to be in the same squad position that we are at 70 minutes. No, not a prayer, especially if we sell them Keenan Davis, who's a pup. I mean, sorry, £15 million, please.
I think we'd probably take
No, we'll take 15. We need to get that FFP balanced, David. But you take my point on the subs that we can, you know, morally in the game, it doesn't sit very well because it strengthens the top teams, but it can be used to our advantage too, I think.
Just finally, a bit of a revolving doors on the assistant manager. People do get their knickers in the twist about this. I remember, it's hard to quantify the role of an assistant manager. You've got people building statues to Craig Shakespeare saying he was responsible for Leicester winning the league. Yes, of course he contributes, but what's he do at Villa? What's he do at Norwich? What's he do at Watford? It's that kind of mix. It's when they're in the right team, that's probably when they excelled. So it's all about how these coaches fit together in a team. So the Beale and Gerrard combination worked well for Rangers, but I mean, from our point of view as just Villa fans, based on what we've seen, it's not as if we're losing anything. It's not as if they came in, took over, transformed us, and we were just missed out on Europe or we got into Europe. So we're not actually losing anything tangible in terms of achievement, is my take on that. And likewise, it seems we've got very much a kind of a like for like in terms of stature, kind of experience, because obviously in terms of, when I say experience, I mean in terms of working with Gerrard, because you know Gerrard's worked with,
well, they've all come through the same system, haven't
they? Before they've come through the same system, so there is a bit of a like for like swap, so I'm not concerned in the slightest.
No, and philosophy wise, having done a bit of reading on him, his Blackpool team actually plays a very similar way to Villa, and he'll have the same model that Gerrard has tried to impose on Villa, this kind of Klopp style, which is being currently branded as a high five, which is going to be one of these annoying tactical phrases that everyone talks about, which is essentially a front three with bombing on wing backs, which is of course is what Villa have tried to do, albeit in a very haphazard way. Would that be the polite way of putting it at times?
Yeah.
Blackpool have played a very similar way, so I don't think he'll be coming in with like loads of new ideas. I think it'll be come in and reinforce what Gerrard's already doing.
And by the way, people, he's not coming in and taking over the way that Villa play, and it's not all through him. So exactly. Doing deep research into how he played for Blackpool, Blackpool are just where they are.
They were in League One.
You know, I did, you know, watch the playoff final where obviously he got the upper hand against Lincoln City. God damn him. But yeah, they had a system that Lincoln did find hard to deal with, but also specific players as well with that kind of high five. But ultimately, this is Gerrard's gig. Gerrard's the pull, certainly in the transfers. But also, it'd be naive to think that he needs assistant managers to insert a style of play. It's all about compliment. And also, you know, the guy's management and how he gets on with the team is obviously comes into play. But you'd assume they wouldn't employ him if
there were the rumours that did the rounds that McGinn and a couple of other players that had quite a hefty fallout with Michael Beale.
You know, you can read it two ways: absolute bullshit, or you could go for the "there's no smoke without fire." Now, if you go down the no smoke without fire route, if I was any coach manager at Aston Villa, I would have had crosswords with those players during this season, 100%.
Well, there hasn't been a player in the squad who's been immune from criticism, has there?
I would have told them a few choice words throughout the, let's say, the back 6 months of this season. So, of course, there's going to be some, you know, crossfire.
In a way, you'd hope there would be. And you don't want a group of 25 supposedly ambitious, high-performing athletes not arguing if things aren't going well. if you're sat around the changing room twiddling your thumbs as a bunch of shrinking violets, who do you end up? You end up being like Man United.
Yeah, so that's how I interpreted that. If there was any crosswords, that would have been it. It's not like, oh, I'm leaving now. Oh,
yeah,
I can't
fuck
take
you,
this.
John.
Fuck you, John McGinn, your chicken suit.
Turkey.
Turkey suit. Phil Shaw, any excitement about our assistant manager?
No, it's a bit of a flex, isn't it? You can go down and left the championship number one guy. Just
yeah, I mean, that's the only interesting
assistant.
Debate here is one manager goes, I have ambition, I want to be a number one, see you later. I mean, if you read his interviews at QPR, it's all about, you know, he's a bloody Londoner and he wanted to, he's always dreamt of managing and it was always his prime focus. It's quite funny seeing Birmingham Mail coming to the conclusion because he bought a house around Birmingham, he was never going to leave Villa. Well, you got to live somewhere, and when you're in the football game, you don't really bother renting, do you? You just buy. So from that point of view, you've got also one that, as Phil just said, has given up a position, number one position, to come to Villa. But you can see the logic in that, because there's a different level to player, there's a different level to opportunity. If you want to use that horrible word, project, it's kind of intriguing. You're at a club that's getting some of the best players in the world to try to break into a top six, which increasingly is fortified, you know, by the status quo of just how the game works nowadays.
I think he knows as well that his stock is high because he brought Blackpool, who at the time had been a bit of a shambles and were on the rebuild from League One to the Championship. He knows at that level he's got enough cachet to have a year or two at Villa, go back and go and say, well, I'm not probably going to get promoted with Blackpool, but I can go and manage a
Dutch team.
Well, yeah. if he wants to go back into management, he can. Or maybe he sees that actually, because supposedly he's not Blackpool manager, is he? He's head coach. They have that kind of setup going on where he coaches the players, but in terms of other stuff's taken out of his hands. So he's probably thinking, actually, if I'm here to coach players, I can coach better players at a higher level and I can have a better canvas.
Yeah. Right. Just before we go, let's have a little litmus test. Where do you think we're going to be finishing next season? I mean, we'll do it properly in terms of predictions once we have our full stock of our full hand of new signings. But I just want to gauge a bit of mood. Phil Shaw.
I'll go with you.
Daniel.
I think we're gonna finish sixth. Yeah.
Wow. Ooh. I'm gonna go eighth.
15th.
That's the spirit. That's the spirit that made Villa great.
No, it's not. It's the reality.
Hashtagging continual improvement.
I mean, that's where I thought we would finish last season. But then the old COVID and, fucked up pre-season injuries, etc. So you'd probably have to quantify it by saying, you know, if everything injury-wise and the war in Ukraine doesn't extend to the rest of Europe.
It'll probably extend to Europe when I arrive in East Germany sometime in August. So I'll let you know from the front line.
But I would hope. I mean, a lot depends on other teams, but we've got such room for improvement just in results that I would hope about eighth at least.
And there's so much. I know people have been critical of them, but there's so much talent in that squad, and as you've said loads of times, and they've all got upside.
Yeah. So, on that note, haven't we got an appointment to attend?
Yeah, we've got to meet Johnny Depp down for drinks at the Aston Tavern and a pork roll. Come on, Phil, get your chocolate bomb on.
Yeah, we've told him you cannot visit Birmingham without an experience. They've actually opened it up privately for us. Only cost a tenner.
It's remarkable, isn't it?
Compared to that 25-odd grand that he had to pay for that Indian restaurant. So
he's in for a banging night down in B6.
Time to get an Uber and meet him there. Right.
Are we off for a mega wine?
Mega dog.
Mega dog. Until my nasal passages have all cleared out and I can deliver dulcet tones once again, it's goodbye from me and it's goodbye from them.
Goodbye.
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 Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.